Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back! That's a buzzer!
Right here on 960theref.com.
What's up, everyone? Sam Franco, Chris Brame back with another episode of The Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com. You can also find us on iTunes. Just subscribe. Give us a little five-star review. We'd greatly appreciate it. Rate and review. Those are the words of the day when it comes to iTunes and podcasting. But we've got plenty to get to on this edition of The Crossover. On the back end, we'll talk Ronald Acuna and his just torrid pace right now and what he's doing for the Braves at the top of the lineup. But we've got college football on the brain, and that's where we're going to start first. We'll keep it mainly SEC, as we'll get to Alabama and their quarterback situation here in a minute. But first and foremost, Georgia got big news this past weekend with the announcement that Demetrius Robertson will indeed be eligible this season to play for the Dogs. And again, that is just such a huge announcement for many different reasons. But the main one is it just adds depth to a Georgia receiving corps that I think a lot of people were excited about, or were going to be excited about, going into this season.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly has to put Georgia up there as one of the most impressive receiving corps in the country. It also adds just another deep element there. You know, I guess like Javon Wims was never really, he wasn't like the type of guy that you viewed as just a burner that was going to stretch the field. But Georgia did throw the ball downfield to him quite a bit. And so there was a deep option there that, you know, the Dogs have to figure out a way to replace. And I think Robertson could be a key there. You know, another thing that's kind of been lurking here through the first, I mean, going on now 2 weeks of preseason camp is, you know, Godwin has been out dealing with a minor knee issue.
Right.
And so, you know, you start to get to the point where, all right, well, how long does this minor knee issue linger on as we get closer and closer to kickoff before we should start freaking out about it? So, I mean, if something more major were actually, you know, was going on there with Godwin, and maybe he wasn't available or something at the beginning of the season, then, you know, that's another spot where Robertson's acquisition is a big one.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. And here's a big thing about it, too. You look at Georgia, a team last season who, let's remember, played for a national championship in said season. They were about 70-30 in terms of their splits. I mean, 70% of the time they were running the ball. Granted, you have to kind of dive further into that statistic just because they had big leads in a lot of games, so a lot of it was churning out the clock there at the end of the game. So it's probably something you need to look at more on a quarter-by-quarter, even half-by-half basis. But the fact that Georgia is a run-first team surprises no one. But barring any significant injury to Terry Godwin, I think this is a lineup, or at least this is a roster on offense that is going to be just as comfortable, you know, pounding the rock and throwing the ball. I mean, this is they could go out there and rock four receiver sets.
Yeah, I mean, when you just look to it, the number of five stars that are either going to start or at least be on the two deep on this offense, you now have Robertson, Godwin, and Hardman. You got Isaac Nauta as a tight end there. On the offensive line, you've got, you know, with word that Mays was working out at left guard the other day, so you're going to have Mays and Wilson starting on the offensive line. And this isn't including Fromm and Thomas, who technically were four stars, but had terrific freshman seasons in college. And then DeAndre Swift, Zamir White, James Cook, who has drawn a lot of raves so far in the preseason. I mean, what is that? Is that like seven or eight guys?
Yeah, and you didn't even mention
there?
Justin Fields. You were talking the two deep there. Let's throw him in there as well.
Yeah, Fields, I skipped him too. So, I mean, you're looking at like double figures potentially of guys who were five-star rated recruits that, you know, could contribute and play significant snaps this fall on offense for Georgia.
Yeah, which is pretty incredible. And again, I'm not saying Georgia's going to go out and run a spread offense, but you've got a quarterback that's very confident in his own ability in Jake Fromm and one in Justin Fields that we may see a lot as well. So this is an offense that, yeah, I mean, if they get behind in games, which is something we didn't really see a whole lot of last season, you know, maybe they are a team that could get into a shooting or a shootout or whatever in terms of those types of situations that present themselves in games. You know, this is an offense that Jake Fromm was already pretty good at getting the team down the field quickly when he needed to. Just look at the Oklahoma game in the fourth quarter. But this is an offense that the two-minute drill seems like it could be a strength. But also grinding out games could be a strength just because of all the options that you do have.
Yeah. You know, and another thing with Robertson, too, that for me, the impact that Wims had on the offense last season is one that I'm less confident right now or, you know, least assured of can be replaced, as opposed to Chubb and Michelle are all-time greats with Georgia. But, I mean, DeAndre Swift definitely showed last year as a freshman these flashes that, you know, Georgia's going to be fine in the running department. But some of the impact that Wims had, especially on third down. I mean, you look at some of Fromm's passing numbers and his completion percentages to the left side of the field versus the right side of the field. And the left side of the field is where Wims was definitely inhabiting most of the time, especially on throws that were 20 or more yards downfield. You know, that's another, I guess, calming influence there when it comes to Demetrius Robertson that could help soften that blow of losing Wims there in that passing game.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, A, how he's replaced, but B, you know, what Georgia ends up doing on offense. Do they air it out a little more? You've got to believe that when Jim Chaney heard the news that Robertson was going to be available this season, that he immediately started – you know, getting in his head about certain things they could do on offense, certain splits, certain formations that they maybe could utilize. So I don't think a whole lot's going to change in terms of what Georgia does, but I do think that the opportunity for some different types of plays arises with this.
Yeah, you know, talk about distributing the passes, too. I mean, let's not forget the weapon that Swift was out of the backfield last season also. I mean, Swift had more targets last year than Chubb and Michelle did combine in the passing game. So, you know, when you look at some of those passing numbers and who's going to get the ball and, you know, the idea of, oh, well, we'll see more of the tight ends involved in the passing game this year. Well, between those guys, between now the embarrassment of riches at wide receiver and then the impact somebody like Swift could have coming out of the backfield – as well. I mean, Georgia's going to have the potential to have one of those offenses that could just do whatever it wants to do whenever it wants to do it. I mean, a big key to that will be, you know, how the offensive line holds up, but I don't think there's anyone that's really too concerned about the quality of the line of scrimmage heading into the season.
Yeah, exactly. So when you look at Georgia, they're not going to be – It's not that I don't think they're going to be predictable. I just think that they have an ability to be unpredictable, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, are they going to, you know, what are they going to do? Who are they going to get the ball to? Now, and again, it goes back to which five-star are they going to target on this play? Swift? Is it going to be Hardman? Is it going to be Godwin? You know, is it going to be Robertson now? And that's not even talking about, remember, let's not forget him. Georgia's leading receiver against Alabama in that national championship game was Riley Ridley.
Yeah. And he outdid his brother in that game, who's now in Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah. I mean, so, and now that's the case of, you know, was that just one game? You don't want to make a big deal out of it? Or was that maybe, you know, the sign that Ridley's finally going to, you know, maybe break out and, you know, and realize more of his potential than he has so far?
Yeah, so, I mean, on offense, you look at Georgia and everything looks like it's going to be, you know, hunky-dory. And it's funny because you're replacing two of Georgia's best ever running backs who just so happen to be playing for Georgia at the same time, and Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. So for Georgia to, you know, I'm not going to say they're going to be better at the position, but they certainly have a lot of talent at the position and a lot of young talent at the position.
Yeah, you know, going into 2018, my confidence in Georgia at least now has, it's like 95% of it has to do with the team Georgia has, as opposed to last year, even the year before, a lot of like the belief that Georgia should have a good year had less to do with the Dogs and more to do with the rest of the SEC East, which has been garbage.
Right.
And, you know, so and because it's been garbage, we've seen a handful of teams have made recent coaching changes, especially, you know, the other big two there in Tennessee and Florida that have Pruitt and Mullen now. But I still think that the SEC East is well, because Georgia's in the East, I won't say it's the worst division in college football. Probably the Pac-12 South will be this year, but the SEC East still looks like, after Georgia, it's a pretty weak group of teams, with Florida, because they've definitely upgraded at head coach, you know, certainly improving over where they were last year. But I don't see any of the other teams in the SEC East necessarily being better than they were a year before. I mean, at the best, maybe they're about the same.
Yeah, I was going to say, you look at Florida, you look at Tennessee, the big two, as you refer to them there, in terms of schools that'll be competing with Georgia. I would say Missouri, just because they have Drew Locke, they may be better, but they might not be, because they're bringing in a new offensive coordinator in Derek Dooley. So I think there's some question marks there. I think Kentucky and Vanderbilt are probably going to be Kentucky and Vanderbilt. You know, I don't think there's going to be any difference. So, yeah, I mean, you're looking at the schools that have the best chance to knock you off. And I really think South Carolina might be the only one that has noticeable improvement, or at least more improvement on the surface than a Florida or a Tennessee, just because I think those teams are pretty devoid of talent. And for the good recruits or anybody that the Florida has gotten, it seems like they can't stay out of trouble.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with South Carolina is I could see them being maybe about the same as they were last year. They won 9 games, you know, including the bowl win over Michigan. I mean, is South Carolina under Will Muschamp going to, you know, graduate now to being like a 10 or an 11 win force? I'm not buying that. And they've just got a couple of spots on their schedule that I think are going to be tough for them to really navigate, especially the month of November, where they play 3 of their 4 games on the road. The only home game is Chattanooga. They go to Oxford, they go to Gainesville, and they play at Clemson. And that's the last month of the season when a team like South Carolina, that doesn't have the depth that other programs do, that's just going to burn them, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, maybe in the second week of the season, they're a threat to Georgia, but you know, most of the excitement around South Carolina involves their offense. They've got Samuel, they've got Bryan Edwards, and I just don't know that I'm prepared to trust an offense of a team that's coached by Will Muschamp.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. We'll have to wait and see on them. But one team that we know will be competing with the Dogs for the SEC title and possibly more, it's so funny how two seemingly similar situations can be very, very different. You look at Georgia and the quarterback competition between Jake Fromm, Justin Fields, and then you look at what's going on in Alabama with Tua Tagovailoa and Jalen Hurts. We saw this at Alabama's Fan Day, the running of the Gumps.
The running of the Gumps.
But Jalen Hurts coming out afterwards and saying that, you know, he felt like he wasn't treated very well in terms of there was no communication at all, really, between him and the coaching staff in terms of this situation, and kind of showing off the more millennial mindset, I guess, of guys wanting to be appreciated, wanting to feel like they are wanted, if you know what I mean. And Jalen Hurts, very forthright, very, you know, outspoken in this, but we haven't heard anything since. That is not a surprise, because Nick Saban does like to bottle this stuff up, but you've got a situation where it seems like the not-so-veteran coaching staff, in terms of what Kirby Smart has here at Georgia, is doing a way better job of handling these situations than the veteran coaching staff of the best coach in the country in Nick Saban.
Well, you know, I mean, a factor there is the fact that Hurts now is on his third offensive coordinator.
Right.
So when it comes to having a relationship with assistant coaches, there's been so much turnover there at Alabama that the new guy doesn't really know anything about him. So for the new guys there, it's like Tua and Hurts are basically on the same level. I think where Hurts got his feeling hurt was when Saban got up there at SEC Con, and when he was asked the question about whether or not Jalen Hurts would be the quarterback at Alabama on September 1st or be at Alabama on September 1st, you know, Saban said, I don't know. And, you know, I think that's where Hurts is like, I never gave any indication or sign I was leaving here. I mean, why would you say something like that I'm not going to be here? But now I think what's happened is he's going to graduate in December. And
he gone.
He won't be there next year. I don't know how much he's going to play this fall, You know, if he really is going to transfer, I guess he'd be better off just redshirting and not playing at all so that he can have that additional year of eligibility whenever he goes someplace else, because he'll be able to leave as one of those grad transfers and play, you know, right from the get-go.
But that's the thing. What if, you know, he went up to Saban and said, look, if you're not going to play me, Saban has never done...
Play me or trade me.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's in the pros.
Saban has never done the I'm going to do this for the benefit of the player thing. He's always looking out for the program. Why did he go after Jonathan Taylor when he had an open criminal investigation? You know, you hear all the stories about Saban and gray shirting. There was a story of a recruit showing up to campus trying to find his dorm and them saying, you don't have a dorm, you're not enrolled here. So, I mean, there have been stuff where Saban always wants to protect the program, whereas other coaches, and Kirby Smart's even mentioned this, want to do what's best for the players. And so Nick Saban, in this instance, I don't think, I can't speak for him, so I don't know for 100%, but this is just my perception. I don't think he cares about Jalen Hurts. One iota. I really don't.
Well,
because he's found a quarterback now in Tua Tagovailoa that is better and can probably help him win more games. So Jalen Hurts, as far as Nick Saban concerned, is an afterthought.
Well, for now, he needs him for depth. But, I mean, with that attitude, it's like it actually would benefit both. I mean, because Tua is the better player, so playing him would benefit the team. And then not playing Hurts would actually help Hurts,
but
because
that's what
he
I'm
would
saying,
have
though,
that extra year. So.
What if Tua has run out the course of a game and it's late in the fourth quarter, they're up, and Saban's like, hey, Jalen, get in the game.
Yeah.
What if Jalen says no? He's like, I'm not going in here. I'm trying to preserve my redshirt. You know, that's the thing. What if before the season, Hurts went up to Saban and was like, hey, don't play me.
Right.
Like, I want that extra. Saban's never done that in terms of, okay, it might hurt our program, but I'm going to do this to benefit you. That's not his MO. That's not what he does. So I would be very intrigued to see what would happen there. Like,
well,
if Hurts just went ahead and said, hey, just go ahead and, you know, let me. You know,
now he's got at least the four games that he can play and still preserve his red shirt. So,
that's true.
You know, maybe we'll see it the first month of the season. They'll both play a little bit, and then things will settle in. You'll realize two is the guy, and then, Hurts will just be there as the backup, and then he'll leave in December.
But when Hurts was being interviewed by the media on the field at their fan day, and just for him to say all the stuff that he did, you got to believe when Nick Saban was made aware of that, that he probably blew a few gaskets.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a rare moment of just, like, openness that you don't typically get, because those guys are so just, like, they're, you know, robotic, they're coached, that it almost feels like they're programmed what to say. And, you know, he was asked this question off the cuff, and he gave an honest answer about it. And, you know, to me, it just went back to, you know, it was that SEC con. Mm-hmm. And when Saban, you know, when you're asked if a guy's going to be on your team in September 1st, I mean, to me, like, the answer's like, well, of course he is. Why wouldn't he be? But,
yeah.
I mean, when you're just like, I don't know.
Yeah, what a horrible answer.
Yeah.
Like, why have coaches recently been so bad at talking to the media? You know, we talk about Urban Meyer just blatantly lying to the media. And we talk about Nick Saban and him being like, is he going to be? I don't know. It's like, well, that's not good.
Well,
have confidence in your players.
But the worst now is Muschamp when it comes to, I mean, even just unprovoked there to start in on, you know what? Anonymous sources, they're not credible.
It's like, okay, Chief. And then the president of South Carolina kind of came out and, like, backed him up. And it's like, South Carolina has a journalism school.
Well,
I bet the dean of that school and the professors within that school were like, oh, great, thanks for undermining us, you jerk.
Well, now the Washington Post has a story that is quoting anonymous Maryland parents. It's a defense of DJ Durkin. So I'm guessing Will Muschamp approves of those anonymous sources when it's the anonymous – it's the anonymous parents who are defending the head coach as opposed to the ones inside the program that are, you know, shedding some light on some negative aspects of it.
Also, shout out to Maryland for waiting 2 months to actually contact the family of the player that died.
Yeah, man, Damon Evans is already in it.
Great
there,
start.
Huh?
Great start. But that's the thing. It's like, why in the hell did you wait 2 months? And, like, look, Damon Evans just took this job full time, but he's been their acting AD for over a year.
Since last October.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, not over a year, but
close to a year.
So he's not clean in this. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how the Maryland situation's handled, but again, why the hell did they wait 2 months before even reaching out to the family? Like,
yeah,
that's horrible.
That press conference the other day was, I think, an attempted career preservation for not only Damon,
but the president of the university.
And also the DJ Durkin. I mean,
right.
I feel like they're just trying to save him at some point. But as it turns out, I mean, mean, Durkin was at that practice, so I don't know. I don't understand how you can.
How does he get off or clean from this?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, they're just trying to blame it all on the strength and conditioning program there. But and a lot of times with those off-season programs, I think the coaches aren't allowed to be around at all times. But in this instance here, he was there. So
right.
I'm not. It's like weird how it just seems obvious to everyone except the University of Maryland that they should probably get rid of DJ Durkin.
I think the bottom line in all of this, from Nick Saban and the way we've seen him treat players, to what's going on at Ohio State, to what's going on at Maryland now, can we stop prioritizing football over the livelihoods, over the families, over all of this stuff? Like, football has taken, and college football in particular, in these situations, has taken so much of a precedent and jumped so much to the forefront of what we defend and what we try to do to enjoy it. It's gotten so out of hand that we've completely, it seems like, as a society, lost perspective.
Yeah, well,
in terms
just,
of what's important.
It's tribalism. You know, you're whatever your team is, you support it all at all costs, and it's ugly. Now, you've had Ohio State fans, they think Urban Meyer's a great guy.
Yeah, everyone they had a rally for him.
Yeah. I mean, everyone else in the country's like, "Eh, he should probably be let go," but man, the longer that drags on, the more you start to believe that at the most he's going to get a suspension. Of a couple of games, but he's not going to lose his job.
Which
but.
Seems at this point that, like, with that situation, the way it unfolded, the fact that he blatantly lied about it, him keeping his job would just prove what I just said. The priorities are way off right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, even with an instance where the president of a university, as you pointed out, that likely does have a journalism school, the University of South Carolina.
Oh, they do, 100%.
Is... And it's Will Muschamp too, but that's the coach that you're speaking out in support of, saying something just completely idiotic. That
well, anonymous sources are the backbone of journalism.
Yeah,
you ever heard of Deep Throat?
Right, they're not credible. It's just completely idiotic, and he's the president of the university. But it just gets to the point that and look, I'm a huge college football fan, so I guess I'm partly to blame here. But in this country, our institutes of higher education, their priority now is not to educate. Their highest priority now, at least the ones in these Power Five conferences, is to run a world-class football program and have
or
a
basketball
football
program
or basketball. That takes precedence above education.
And that's why anytime you try to hear these guys come out and talk about what academic means and all that, it's not every coach, because I'm sure there are a lot that really do think it matters. Tom Crean is a guy, Georgia's new basketball coach, who has done a great job with the academic side of things for his players. But not, you know, for every Coach Crean, there's 100 other coaches that don't really care and that their only goal is to keep their job and to try to win.
Right. Well, that is what they're getting paid to do.
Right.
And, you know, I do always laugh, though, too. Some of these coaches do have these bonuses in their contract for their, you know, if their players graduate well
rates.
In classes, which I always love that, too, because the coaches then are getting rewarded for something they had nothing to do with. The players are the ones doing all the hard work in the classroom to stay eligible, and the coaches end up getting rewarded and benefit from it.
Well, by that logic, you need to blow up the whole system then, because the coaches get a lot more of the credit for the work that the players do, not just on the field.
No, but financially.
But also off the field.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, they get all the money.
Right.
Yeah.
So, it's again, the whole system, from the way we prioritize things to the way that, look, murder has been swept under the rug or tried to have been swept under the rug at a college basketball program because they wanted to win. You know,
They blamed the victim.
The victim. Yeah, it was
a
Baylor.
He was a drug dealer.
Yeah.
Yeah, Baylor, yeah.
Just absurd.
Which owns two of the worst three scandals in college sports history. There's
right.
Penn State, and then there's Baylor and Baylor.
Sometimes you just got to take a step back and reprioritize.
And then there's Michigan State. Both of those coaches are still just, they're going on their merry ways.
I think a lot of these things happen to where the backlash at first is so severe that the institutions just let it kind of die out. And I think that's what Ohio State's probably trying to do with Urban Meyer.
Well, oh, yeah. I mean, they're probably sending like a... Because
they gave us, what, 2 weeks for their investigation or whatever?
Yeah, well, they're sending a gift basket over to Maryland right now.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. They're big fans.
Yeah, I mean, they've knocked Urban Meyer and Ohio State off the front page.
All right, before we wrap things up here on this edition of the Crossover Podcast, Sam Franco, Chris Bram along with you, Ronald Acuna, man, the Braves outfielder, the rookie outfielder for the Braves, is having an incredible run right now. Here are some stats on what Acuna's done. He's the youngest player in MLB history to homer twice on back-to-back days, to homer 8 times in an 8-game span, to homer 6 times in a 5-game span, to homer in 5 straight games, to homer to lead off 3 straight games, and to hit 5 career leadoff homers. He's the youngest player in MLB history to do all of those things.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely going to be the leader right now for the rookie of the year, but if he keeps this up and the Braves somehow won the division and made the playoffs, I mean, I think back to like Chipper Jones in 99.
MVP.
I mean, what if like the Braves have 7 games left against the Phillies, and seeing as how the division race between those two teams has basically been neck and neck for the entire season.
And that's 7 out of the last 10 games for each team, by
right.
the way.
I mean, I would think there's a good chance that they're going to get to those last 7 games and basically still be within a game or two of each other in the division, that's what the season's going to come down to. I mean, what if Acuna's still just smacking home runs at that pace? I mean, what about Acuna for MVP this year?
Yeah, also, and speaking of an MVP, this comes from David O'Brien, who's now with The Athletic, formerly of the AJC. He said Ronald Acuna is the youngest player in MLB history to homer in 4 straight games. This was before he had made it to the 5th straight game. Only other player younger than 21 to do that was Acuna's Venezuelan countryman and favorite player Miguel Cabrera, who did it in April of 2004. By the way, Cabrera's the last guy just, you know, to win the Triple Crown. No big deal.
Yeah. Well, I believe the last, and perhaps it's the only guy who's ever won the Rookie of the Year and the MVP in the same season, is Fred Lynn. So oh, wow. It has been done before. Guy win the Rookie of the Year and the MVP.
So you're going back for that one, though.
But, yeah, but, I mean, Acuna's on an absolute tear right now, and really necessary also because the Braves have to beat the Marlins in these games. What is today? We're recording this on a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. They're playing the Marlins tonight. After tonight or today, they'll have 7 more games left against the Marlins and Mets. The Phillies still play the Marlins and Mets 17 times.
Oof.
You know, and the Braves have this series coming up now this weekend against the Rockies, who have been the hottest team in baseball for the last 2 months.
It's crazy. A lot of people, and talking NL West, you talk about the Dodgers and you talk about the Giants, and it's funny because those two teams were playing yesterday. A big brawl happened with Yasiel Puig involved, and neither of those teams is in first place.
The Dodgers are in third now.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the Diamondbacks and the Rockies are up there, and so the Braves have these 4 games against the Rockies, which, as you're listening to this, they're probably in the midst of. And they've still got 4 games out in Arizona coming up in a little bit. They've got 1 game against the Cubs. So the Braves' schedule is, they got a rugged schedule here down the stretch. So these games that they've got, these chances they've got against the Marlins and the Mets, I mean, they just have to win them all, and so far so good on that front, thanks to Acuna.
Yeah, no doubt. You got to capitalize, certainly, on those situations and when you have those opportunities. And hopefully the Braves can end up doing that. But baseball's been fun this year. You know, it's something that the Atlanta baseball fans haven't really had a whole lot to get excited about. But the Braves have certainly given them that. And with the young players, with bringing up Touki Toussaint the other day and him having a good MLB debut, I mean, things are definitely looking up, and I keep teetering back and forth between this. I don't want to invest too much of my time or excitement into it now because it still kind of feels like they might be a year away. But at the same time, if Acuna keeps playing like this, Freddie Freeman hit his 20th homer of the season the other day. I mean, the sky's the limit.
Well, I mean, the key is the way Newcomb and Fulton Evich have been pitching especially. I mean, it's the pitching has been my biggest hang up with this team all year. But right now, I mean, Fulton Evich and Newcomb are on these heaters where they're as good as any pitcher in baseball. Now, it's the middle of August, and October still is a long way away, so to be peaking right now isn't necessarily when you want it, but the Braves need them to be peaking right now because you at least got to get into the playoffs. But, you know, we'll see. You know, Fulton Evich and Newcomb, you still got to ask yourself how much you're necessarily going to trust them and just like a do-or-die situation in the playoffs. But the form they're in right now, I mean, you absolutely would. But, you know, are they going to still be throwing at this level come October? October, October, October.
Oh, man. Speaking of that, hey, T, if you're out there, Give us a call, man. Haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, I mean, he's in the Hall of Fame, so.
He gave me a phantom call last season and didn't stay on the phone long enough for us to get him on air, called during one of the commercial breaks, and Dave and I were running around the studio like chickens with our heads cut off, like, oh, man, T!
Yeah.
So hopefully he calls back, because like you said, he is in the 960 The Ref Listener Hall of Fame, no question about that. All right, he's Chris Brame. I'm Sam Franco. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of the Crossover Podcast. We're recording this, 17 days away from the kickoff of another Georgia football season. So we're going to dive in and get heavy Georgia football here over the next few weeks, and college football heavy as the season starts up very, very soon. But for Chris Brame, again, I'm Sam Franco. Thank you so much for listening. Back again next week with another episode of the Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.